To look after our performance, you have to look after your second brain, which is the gut, connected to your first brain, the brain. And a lot of that is to do by eating enough plants and a variety of that.
Hello, everyone. Emily Avati here. You are listening to episode 301 of Hurdle, a wellness-focused podcast where I talk to inspirational people about everything from their highest highs and toughest moments to essential tips on how to live a healthier, happier, more motivated life. We all go through our fair share of hurdles. My goal through these discussions is to empower you to better navigate yours and move with intention so that you can stride towards your own big potential and, of course, have some fun along the way. For episode 301, I am bringing back my dear friend, Dan Churchill. He is a chef and the author of the new book coming out tomorrow, May 21st, Eat Like a Legend, Delicious, Super Easy Recipes to Perform at Your Peak. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about today. Dan is giving me the insights, his knowledge, his know-how on how to eat better to fuel your body for optimum performance. Whether you're trying to show up to work and be on your A game, or you're training for some sort of a race, a competition, want to perform better at the gym, want to beat that brain fog that comes midday almost every day. Yep, I used to be that person too. I get it. He has the know-how. We talk about so many great tips today, covering everything from hydration to micronutrients, macronutrients, how many vegetables and fruits you should be getting regularly, and cannot forget the importance of protein. Truly a really comprehensive rundown today from Dan. And I'm so excited for his new book. Again, it is called Eat Like a Legend, Delicious, Super Easy Recipes to Perform at Your Peak. Fun fact, Dan has been on the show twice before. He was my guest for episode 12. So this is a long-standing relationship. He is a dear friend of mine, and I have this cookbook. I read through some of the names of the recipes during our conversation. Trust me, oh my God, they look amazing. That feels like the biggest understatement. I am already planning to make you one entitled 12 Minutes to Shakshuka Heaven this coming weekend. If you're not yet subscribed to the weekly Hurdle newsletter, I would love to land in your inbox every single Friday. And there you get some insights from me, plus so many of my favorites as they stand right now, what I'm listening to, what I'm reading, my gear picks, and so much more. A lot of the same motivation, inspiration you love from the show, again, directly in your inbox, absolutely free. Every Friday, the link to subscribe is in the show notes. Make sure you're following along with Hurdle over on social. It's at Hurdle Podcast. I am over at Emily Abadi. And with that, let's get to it. Let's get to hurdling. Today, I'm welcoming my dear friend, Dan Churchill, back into the studio. He's got a new book coming out. It's called Eat Like a Legend, Delicious, Super Easy Recipes to Perform at Your Peak. Welcome, Dan. How are we doing?
G'day, mate. Thanks for having me back.
Good day, mate.
You even said the legend as Aussie as you possibly could.
It's, you know, what I go for. You know, you're no stranger to the show here, Dan, although there are people that are going to be new to you that are listening. So why don't we give them a little bit of a rundown of how you got really interested in food, how you began cooking before we talk today about how to eat like a legend, how to fuel for your best performance, and of course, also better mental side of things.
Yeah, you got it. Well, first, shout out to all the Hurdle listeners because Em's a legend. Like, she defines legend. So for those who've never heard my journey before, I'm a chef, formerly a strength and conditioning coach. So in Australia, I was a strength and conditioning coach. I did my master's degree. And then working with those talented athletes on a team level, I found out that they weren't understanding of what the nutritionist was saying at a practical sense for their cooking. And I was cooking at home since the age of 11. So I just essentially put them two together and allowed the athletes to understand how to actually cook the meals that the nutritionist wanted them to actually have. So over time, I then jumped back into kitchens, did it more of an actual profession, if you will, started releasing some cookbooks. And that led me to being able to move to America and work with some of the best athletes in the world. So my skill set is the ability to take a complex topic of nutrition, particularly in the performance world, and put it into an easy to understand and practical setting, or the applied nutrition space in the actual cooking. So that's what I do.
Someone hears, I moved to the United States and then I started working with all these dope humans, and they're like, cool, but how? So what's the how? How did that happen for you?
You know, it's funny. I'm reading Atomic Habits for like the fourth time.
Right on my desk right here.
I know, I noticed it, mate. Like I can't be more... It can't be more apparent, the word, obviously, grit, but also how to play the long game is in anything. So, you know, you've been doing this podcast for many years, right? And so, like, you're constantly getting the reps in. And I talk about this a lot. It's like, get the reps in. So what I did was I found a way to be consistent on something I'm passionate about. And that was through content. I was able to share my message and break through the mold of how people should be looking at themselves through performance and using food to do so. So, you know, it could be simply just through Instagram. It could be blogs. It could be speaking to people at dinners that I was then cooking at. And that evolved into eventually people had heard of what I was doing to then, you know, my number one SEO'd topic was the healthy chef on Google. And so that led to articles that I'd been creating. And so Under Armour reached out to me. And that was the very first like moment for me to reconcile that the work that I've been doing for years of creating content, creating articles, putting up my philosophies around performance-based food had actually worked. And, you know, we talk about just being consistent and eventually it pays off. It does.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love that idea of the reps. I mean, completely unrelated to cooking. I was saying to someone yesterday that I've been out of the dating game forever. And at this point, I feel like I just need some reps. Like, I'm not the kind of person that likes to just go on a date for a free dinner, unlike friends of mine when we were in our early 20s. That was never me. It was never me. It was never me. But I feel as though now I need to get back into dating in a way that I'm just putting in the reps.
Yeah, mate.
I'm out of practice.
You're out of we've talked about this. There's a guy, there's so many guys out there that would be lucky to have you. We've said this.
You're very sweet, Dan.
But we'll make it happen. But 100%, it applies to everything, whether it be dating, cooking, or, you know, this simple one, like you hear reps, you think getting stronger in the gym. But think about learning a language, doing better at Wordle in the morning, reading, or even just, you know, making sure you've been consistent about spending time with someone. You know, I always talk about looking after you first. And I think one of the biggest things that I talk about getting the reps in is, when was the last time you were consistently getting the reps in to look after you first?
Totally. I totally agree. And even, I mean, I can apply this to the physical therapy exercises I'm doing right now. My hip is feeling a little wonky. Of course, why would I ever be able to be completely injury free? And I know that every day, if I put in the reps, it's going to pay off. It might not happen as fast as I want it to, but that's where patience comes in. And that's where you learn the lessons, right? Like, it's nice when things go your way and everything feels easy, but it is those moments of adversity, the difficult moments, the excessive amount of reps that we put in that really teach us how to be better and help pay off in the long haul.
Yeah, the best example I've got that I don't know if it's relevant to everybody here, but there's a guy called Mr. Beast on YouTube. He says, you know, first 2 years of doing YouTube, you make a lot of mistakes and no one knows you. For the next 2 years, no one knows you, but you start to make headwind. The fifth year is when you start to actually make some, momentum. But if you think about that, 5 years, who's willing to be in the wilderness for 2.5, 3 years before anything happens? And that's totally the same with anything that we do.
Totally. So I'm staring at this book here, Eat Like a Legend. Great photo, by the way.
Appreciate it.
Tell me how this came to be. This is a really beautiful looking cookbook.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, so I've been out of the cookbook game for about 6 years. You know, transparently, my last book didn't do well in the States, but that was before I actually had even moved here. So what happened was I launched a book from Australia here. And it was kind of like the early stage of social media where people weren't looking at the followings as where they're from or demographics, and they're just looking at them as numbers. So I had a bit of a following back then. It was like, you know, the equivalent to whatever it is now that's like big, but it was small compared to what we have now. And so they thought like, oh, this guy's got so many followers, he's going to do well overseas. So they signed me to a book deal and it didn't do well. And so for me, the adversity and the hurdle in that was like, it kind of put me on the back foot and a lack of confidence, for example. And so 6 years of me knowing I wanted to do another book was constantly in my head, but I was like, when's the right time? And it took me to like understand how, honestly, everything from branding to messaging to building relationships that could help me, that really helped me kind of firstly get over that confidence barrier, but then meet the right people that eventually, after getting the reps in, put me in the right direction. So what happened was a guy called Dr. B, Dr. Will Bulsiewicz, who's the gut health MD, he launched a book called Fiber Fueled. And I was talking to him and he said, dude, when are you doing your book? You've been talking about all these philosophies for a long time now on your podcast, everything you talk to people about. When are you doing your book? And I was like, you know what, man? You're right. It's time. And I knew within me that it was like, okay, I wanted to put a book together that was going to help people get the reps in, put themselves first by reading something they could, you know, sink their teeth into, learn fundamental recipes, have tips along the way, but also have a really big point of difference in the performance aspect, which is what I do. And I didn't want it to be where it's like, you have to be an athlete. You know, I call everyday legends inside this book for anybody because everybody needs to perform every day, whether it be, you know, a mother looking after their kids or someone trying to get a promotion or whatever it is in their own daily life. So I really like spoke to him about this. He's like, dude, let me introduce my lead agent. He introduced me to his lead agent and Steph's amazing. And then she just was like, write me a proposal because I'd love to do this book. And I put the proposal together with a writer and she went straight to a publisher, Harper, and they were like, we want this right now. So it was a really, I think the biggest thing for me to explain is I had to get over this concept of failure that I had done and the learnings I had from that very first book in the States that I had done to then realize I've learned so much for me to then grow and now apply to this new book and this new project. Have you written a book before?
No.
But you've done a lot of writing, right?
So I do like, a lot of writing.
All right. So like writing a book's a project, but it's also like when you fail at something, you do, and I want to say fail, it's like, I think you set goals. And when I'm so goal oriented, we are so goal orientated, particularly in this day and age, it's like, if I'm going to do a book, I want to do it so well and be all in on it. And that's when, you know, you just know.
Yeah. You know. When you know, you know.
You know.
Well, I mean, this book is entirely different than your last book called Dude Food. Yeah. And I say that not just for a quick laugh, but also because this book embodies who it is that you are. And I think that life happens in that way and projects show up for us when it feels right with us. And you've done so much work, not only professionally, but on yourself and getting to know who it is that you are and what it is that you're after and what's your values and what's important to you. And so by putting in that work and putting in those reps on yourself, you got yourself to a place where you were prepared to create the book that was meant for you.
Mate, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Like, this is the book. This book embodies me now, and it's who I am. It's also what I'm passionate about and what I want to have an impact on. But it took me personal development to get there. You know, like over the years of living in New York City, we've grown, but you learn so much about yourself and you learn about what it is you want to share. And people are like, what's your goal? I'm like, well, my goal is not to make, like, straight up, it's like, I know this book's going to change people's lives, right? So becoming a New York Times bestseller is a personal goal, but getting on the list is something that helps you expand the horizons of people's understanding of how they look after themselves. So The point around the journey that what you're talking about was I learned to put myself first, and I don't think this day and age people are doing that, which means they can't put anyone else around them in the same breath of fresh air, you know?
What does it mean to you when you say perform at your peak?
So I feel there's a couple of things to kind of touch on there with respect to like potential, you know, and all these things that we hear are the buzzwords or not. For me, to perform at your peak is someone who's living up to the expectation within themselves of what they can actually achieve. And you know, it's like getting the reps in again applies to this in the sense that as you do the practice, do more of the work, you achieve something that you are setting out to do, goals. But at the same time, when it comes to performance at your peak, you are doing the best you can do at a given skill, action, or step. So cooking, walking with your friends, giving them utmost attention, thinking about a problem, thinking about a project, you're performing. And so to be able to do that is performing at your peak. To get there, you need to be pretty much in like 100% all in that time. Mm-hmm. But also there's things around cognitive health and physical health, emotional, spiritual health, we can even go there, that really helped you optimize your overall performance. So today, where we've got so many distractions and things going on outside the world that we often get stimulated by and carry on our way, the idea is to bring it back to you and provide opportunities for you to grow within yourself to then eventually perform at your peak based on applying basic fundamental skills.
And what I'm also understanding here is that your peak can ebb and flow depending on the day. I think that there's so much value in this concept of all it takes is all you've got. And some days what you have, what you've got is different than another. Some days you show up and you're like, all I have to offer today is this. And that's great. And so it's meeting yourself with where you're at and understanding that you can garner all the tools and have them within your power to use at any given moment, understanding that the execution and how you use them may ebb and flow, and that's okay.
Yeah, 100%. And like you think about the most common thing again, physical activity. Leading up to a Boston Marathon or a marathon in general, you're probably dialing yourself in for electrolytes and all the foods that are going to help you get across that line efficiently. But I dare say it, like it's a Tuesday morning or Monday morning and you've got to deliver a presentation or you're pitching or you've got a meeting with someone who could give you, like, how are you fueling yourself to support that step? I just don't think people looking at that with the same frame of mind they are with their, you know, actionable step. So back to your point, it does ebb and flow. And mm-hmm. there's different things where you need to perform at your peak with different types of actions. I just think really honing in on looking after you, whether it be through food or actionable sleep and understanding all that, can be absolutely beneficial more than we think.
All right. So where does someone begin when it comes to fueling to perform at our peak? I feel like we need to break this down into maybe different categories, right? So what's the first thing that someone should be cognizant of when they're really trying to get their act together for optimal performance?
The number one thing is that you treat your body as your body. And the term bio-individual is so apparent here because you can look at identical twins who over the course of their lifetime will look physically different based on the choices they make in their lifestyle, right? So we know that. We've seen that even though you can have the same genes, you have different lifestyle choices. The foods you eat can affect the way that you physically, your phenotype change. So what does that mean? Well, the way I digest things and the way you digest things is going to be different. So your enzymes are going to work more or less efficiently based on certain foods that I'm also having. So when people try to compare between each other, how to eat, it's never the right way to go about it. If your girlfriend can have the pasta, but you want to have the pasta because you see them eating it and you think that's the best way to go about it, you're probably not taking into account your body. So the way we measure this, the most easy way is how you feel. Very subjective, hard to quantify. Then you've got things like physical things, like you can actually look at your stool and there's something called a Bristol stool chart to see that there's a range between 1 and 7 different shapes. You can have the really, really like wet, which is not good. Then you have the super, super hard, which is also not good. You want something that's like in the middle. And so also you can talk about your regularity. And these are great ways for us to understand if we're taking into account our bio-individuality. I think I've used this before with you, mate, but you know, chickpeas are so often deemed a great, you know, ingredient. And they are for the majority of the time. But I'm sure there's people out there who smash hummus because it's amazing. And they wake up the next day or they even 30 minutes after having the hummus with bread, they just don't feel good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, unfortunately, some people don't have the enzymes to break down those legumes. So again, you've got to take that into account. So you've got all those subjective means. You do have the objective with the viewership of like how your stool is. Then you can go into eventually like, you know, deficiencies and understand where you're deficient by getting tests done, such as with Hone and things like that. But that's the number one thing. Number one thing more than anything is to treat yourself individually. Listen to your body and don't just do things because other people are doing that. Number two, cut out refined sugars. Mm. I know that sounds so simple.
He's looking at a can of Diet Coke I have on the desk right now.
But I'd say
it's diet. There's no sugar.
Look, I'm not going to go into this.
He doesn't like my diet. Go.
Look, the number one.
This is my vice.
The number one. Yeah, this is your vice.
Don't take it.
Hey, I've already been through your fridge. I totally nerded out on
it. It's true. Yeah. It's true.
So number two is cut out refined sugars. But all I'm telling you right now is not something everyone's, it's like, oh my God, newsflash. New York Times, front page, Dan Churchill says to do no sugar. Like, everyone knows that.
Right.
Right? But I've seen how important cutting out refined sugars is. So at least remove as much of it you can. The third one is providing the biggest one, in my opinion. We have this argument, we used to anyway, around plant-based versus meat eaters. And it was like to and fro. You'd have like all these heads of their respective arguments going back and forth on Chris TikTok and podcasts and et cetera. But if you look at all the research and the papers, number one actually biggest adjustment was if you are someone, whether or not you are eating meat or not eating meat, the biggest differentiator in our health is and performance is how much plants you are getting. So if you're a meat eater having no plants, it's really bad. Mm-hmm. But if you're a meat eater having plants, you know, it's especially a diversity of plants that's got such a big impact on your support. And the reason for this is we look at the macronutrient profile. I'll talk about this in the book. Can I bring up this thing called the fifth macronutrient? Do you know what the three macronutrients are?
I know this.
You got it.
Carbs, fat, and protein.
Nice. Do you know what the fourth is?
No.
Water.
Oh.
And they sometimes say alcohol too. But I've said the fifth one is actually the cohort of the micronutrients. The reason why I said that is because macro is sexy, really easy to read a packet and see protein, fats, and carbs. We've got this dogmatic approach like numbers. How many calories am I having? Am I at a deficit? You know, all these kind of things. Am I getting enough protein today? And we know protein is such a more amazingly sexy topic. How much protein has I got on that, package? But what we don't talk about is like, you know, the understanding of magnesium and potassium and iron. Like iron in women is mm-hmm. so, and men obviously, but particularly in women with their menstrual cycle, like you have to be so switched on of how much iron you're having. And it's not just the amount of iron you're having, but how much you're absorbing. And that's where green leafy vegetables are so important for your performance, because you can take on all the salmon you want and all the meats and things like that that have the iron. But if you're not having the calcium, vitamin C, all those kind of things to support, you're not going to have the ability to actually withdraw it and use it. So that's why I say, although it's good to have your protein, fats, and carbs, if you don't have the fifth macronutrient, which is your veggies, you are not getting the support. And they're just kind of like, for lack of a better way of putting this together, floating around your system, not being utilized.
Right.
So, to recap, number one, buy the individuality. Number two, cut out refined sugar. Number three, eat more plants.
Okay.
Pretty simple.
Pretty simple. First thing to touch on, lots of things to double click on here. The first thing, refined sugars. For someone who struggles cutting out refined sugars from their diet, how do you recommend that they begin? What's a small step that they can take toward accomplishing that?
Yeah, so this is a good point. The first one's adjusting to like maybe more natural sugars. So honeys and maple syrups, you know, if you can. The reason why I say this is if you look at our intake as like in the American society, a lot of people are just adding sugars to their day, even those already sugars in the existing meals they're about to have.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, not a lot of people are like me and are snobbish about their coffee as an Aussie and can have like the understanding of why we want black coffee. They need to have the sweetener in it. So right. Like go for a honey or a maple syrup, a little dash of that instead of having, you know, table sugar, right? It still has a spike, but it's still got some trace minerals in it that can support other things, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So number one, cut that part out and adjust. Number two is I would work on the ability to kind of understand what your vices are and get the reps in, progressively work and wean your way off to understand how much you're actually taking on than what you actually need. If you're having cereal for breakfast or a granola, there's only that much sugar in there. Plus if you add more sugar to your coffee and then you have, you know, say a snack bar which has got sugar in it, you can start to see it starting to add up really simple. So yeah. I just say progressively start to wean off packaged foods as best as possible too and enjoy plenty of fruit. I love my berries.
Yeah. I've been doing frozen grapes at the end of the day because I definitely have like a dessert vice. So I'm trying to wean off of my Yasso Greek yogurt bars in favor of frozen grapes. These are the things I'm leaning into. The Diet Coke, which you don't like, and the Yasso Greek yogurt bars.
What else do you see is like, even just in general, because we talk about this and you must talk about your friends. It's like, I'm not saying don't ever, I still go and have chocolate.
Totally, totally.
Like, I'm not saying don't have it.
Yeah.
I'm just being alert and understanding of like, there's the simple tips all about our headspace. It's like, well, it's all about you actually putting in the work, which means do you care enough about yourself to actually make the change?
Yeah.
And that's not me saying, well, Dan's giving me an ultimatum. It's like, no, it's just honest. Like if you're someone who wants to cut out refined sugar, I can tell you all the tips and tricks here. At the end of the day, you're the one who's going to have to do it.
Right.
And it's unfortunate. This is the thing about getting reps in and food. It's like getting the reps in is so apparent because you don't see it immediately. It's something that does take, you know, even years to either come to fruition of how important cutting out something like refined sugar can be, you know, can delay or even prevent the onset of so many problematic diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the unfortunate situation where you get a like or a comment that gives you affirmation of how you're doing straight away.
You have
to be put the dedication in.
And this comes full circle with the importance of a why, right? I always say that where there's a why, there's a way. And when you have a firm idea of what it is that your goals are and why it is that you want to be cognizant of what you're putting into your body, then it'll be a little bit easier to make these choices, albeit small, to get you to that point. So for me, I'll give you an example from when I was back in college. I was on a major weight loss journey, and I had been, until I started on this journey, probably eating ice cream at least once a day at some point in my dining hall in college. And so I made the decision that instead of eating ice cream once a day, I, when I was losing weight, was using Weight Watchers. And after I weighed in at Weight Watchers every week, I would go to the drive-thru, get myself a black iced coffee and a glazed stick donut. And that was like when I had my sugar exciting moment. And that's not to say that there wasn't sugar dispersed in other moments throughout my week, but I just made the conscious decision that I was not going to have ice cream every day anymore because my goals were bigger than that.
That's it. You made a point to take care of it. You put yourself first.
Yeah.
But you're also realistic because you need to look after yourself at the whole. This is the rest of your life we're talking about. Your life. So you want to enjoy things. And yeah, like that's all we're saying is like finding ways to motivate you for the longevity of your entire life so you can perform and do the things you want to be doing. And you know, there's nothing worse than having no energy to look after your kids or like not being able to. Yeah, you're pushing for things at work, but you don't have the ability to get off the couch because you're just so tired because you're not sleeping, you're not looking after yourself. And I'd also say it's like, I think for me, and this is not a guy thing, but a lot of guys like to understand, say, building lean muscle and get big. So they follow a numbers spectrum. And I think numbers are really good, but they can also be detrimental in our headspace. So, you know, either be jumping on the scale and looking at a number to determine how healthy we are.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it should be. It should be like how you feel is so much more important. I will say understanding your macronutrient, including the fifth macronutrient profile, is important. So understanding your deficiencies is just as important to understand how you're tracking. So, you know, like I'm doing a new program for High Rocks, but after coming off a marathon, I need to put on muscle. So I am tracking more recently how much I'm eating to make sure I'm working towards my goals. Because I didn't have a huge eating disorder, but I had that, what they do refer to as an eating disorder when I was a young male, all I did is hit the gym and I was conscious of what I was eating to the point that I didn't go out to eat at nighttime because I was concerned about what I'd be putting in my body and I wouldn't enjoy time with my friends because of that. So that is an eating disorder. And so that's very common these days, and particularly in young men. Like they say, women are the ones that have eating disorders, and that's probably more obvious because people are more in tune, whereas guys aren't so vocal about it.
Totally.
But trying to take away that concept that numbers can guide you, but they're not the be all end all.
Definitely. And for those that don't know, can you just give a quick explainer on what High Rocks is?
Yeah, for sure. So High Rocks is essentially a circuit style competition where it's 8 kilometers broken up into 1 kilometer interval efforts, followed by or corresponding with a discipline. So there's 8 disciplines, 8 kilometer efforts, 8 1 kilometer efforts. And it's really exciting because Sensor, the company I work with, which is Chris Hemsworth's fitness company, we just became the equipment partner. So I do a lot of work with them, but it's a sick competition. It's like anyone can get off the couch and do this, and you can also be an elite.
Right.
And do it. So it's really, really exciting.
I like how it's broken up. It reminds me a little bit of like old school, what I would do on like my cardio-centric CrossFit days.
That's honestly it.
Back in the day.
You don't do it anymore?
I haven't done CrossFit in some time, but I am really getting back into Olympic weightlifting, which is fun.
That's sick. What are you actually curious? Like after your Olympic weightlifting, what's the first thing you need to do afterwards? Like first thing you want to do?
The first thing I want to do, well, the first thing I do is when I'm done at the gym, I run home and then I make a smoothie.
Do you want to make the smoothie or you think you need to make the smoothie?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's important for me to make the smoothie and I also look forward to the smoothie.
Cool.
There's like a smoothie bar in the gym that I specifically have trained myself not to go to because it would be so much easier to get their smoothie. But then I walk home with the smoothie when I'd rather just like get that quick mile, be back and get my day started. So for me now, I have gotten back into a smoothie routine, which I haven't been in years, but I enjoy it.
I really appreciate your intentionality with everything, dude.
The intentionality behind that is it costs so much more money to buy the smoothie at the
gym. Yep.
Although like there will be a time and a place where I'm like, today I'm treating myself to a smoothie, especially when I don't have somewhere to go. So if I'm going to the gym on maybe a Sunday, that's a smoothie opportunity versus the one that I like make myself when I come home. But also I like seeing what's actually going in. And although I totally respect and appreciate, and I'm sure that they're dialed into they're putting into the smoothie what they say they're putting into the smoothie, I like to do it myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I also being able to put your own ingredients in, it's empowering. But I will say, a lot of people tell me like, yeah, but there's so many ingredients. I'm like, okay, cool. So I came up with a hack. You ready for this?
I'm ready for the hack.
So I'd go buy a bunch of what we call essentially pint containers, which are 2 cups. Mm-hmm. All right. We use them at the restaurant to store ingredients. So you get a bunch of those. And what you do is you put all your ingredients bar the milk into them. So say you make at the start of the week and you got 5 days of smoothies, it'd be 5 smoothies. So you make 5 of these these pint containers, and it could be like banana, blueberries, your spinach, whatever other ingredients you put in there. And then you just go straight to, you get home and you simply come out of the freezer, put those in, maybe add your mix of seeds and nuts, and then your milk, and if protein's there as well. So instead of having to undo every single thing, you save so much more time by one day of the week putting them all into your pint containers.
And it's better when the fruits are frozen.
Yes.
The smoothie consistency is better. Can we also just like, okay, you kind of just broke it down, but like on a really granular level, let's break down if you're having a smoothie. And I know it will differ based on maybe what you're doing before you have the smoothie. But say someone's doing a workout of some sort. They come home. They're like, I want to have a smoothie because I know I should be getting in my carbs, my healthy fats, my proteins. Talk to me about what goes in an ideal smoothie.
Yeah. So again, depending on everyone's goals and orientation, but we'll just say for like a foundational just energy.
Yeah.
All macronutrients are essential. So you do want certain things. Coming out of a workout, you probably want to have less fat because fat can slow down your digestion process. So, you know, for me, for example, when I finish a workout, I'm trying to get carbs and protein into my body. If I'm having fat slow down that digestion process, it's going to affect the speed in which my body can utilize those macronutrients of carbs and protein. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is I probably restrict the amount of nut butters that I have because obviously it's, you know, consistency of fat in there. Same with avocado. I prefer to have that before a workout, although not too heavy as well, given the fact that people can't consume fat. And then if they're doing a big Metcon, affect their ability to sit in their stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So post-workout, ideally. So I'd sit around like 50 grams of carbohydrates. Reason for this is pretty simple. Our body can store 60 grams of certain forms of glucose and then an additional 30 of fructose. So you're like looking at 90 is what you can maximize per hour, right? At the time. So they used to just be thinking 60 was enough. And then we realized there was another 30 of a different type of, I guess in this case, sugar you can kind of unlock. But I'd say for the majority of people coming out of a workout, male, female, 50 to 60 grams is sufficient. If you're someone who's doing a serious workout, you want to go to the upper echelon of like 90, you know? Protein-wise, I'd say around 30 to 40 grams realistic. And then, you know, you want to minimize your fat to like no more, in my opinion, of like 5 grams.
Got you. And from like a visual POV, if we're talking about using fruit as that carbohydrate, spinach as that carbohydrate, we're talking about like a cup, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So like if you were to fill one of those pint containers, it's, you know, you should see, if you looked at it from the side on, one third of it free. So I'd say a bit over a cup of ingredients.
Got it.
And finish with milk.
Super helpful. Choice.
Yeah.
Taking a break from today's episode to talk to you about my sponsor at AG1. It's important to me that the supplements I take are the highest quality, and that's why for the last 5+ years, I have been drinking AG1. Now, unlike many supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the priority for purity and potency. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there is a reason why I have been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-led manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I absolutely love that there isn't a million different pills and capsules to keep track of every day. Instead, just one scoop of AG1 mixed in with water every morning. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. Truly, AG1 is my longest standing sponsor of Hurdle, and I cannot imagine my regular routine without it. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/hurdle. Again, that site, it's drinkag1.com/hurdle. Check it out. The other thing I wanted to double click on from before was you said a really beautiful term, which I think we should elaborate on, and that is a diversity of plants. What does it mean to have a diversity of plants in your diet, and what should that look like?
Yeah, so there's two things to kind of note here. One's like more exciting to me because I'm a chef. The other side of it is more exciting just for people who are in the science space. But colors in food have a relationship with obviously pigments, and the pigmentation themselves has a relationship with nutritional value. So certain colors have certain types of micronutrients that respond to certain receptors in our body. Similarly though, certain types of colors, and the more dense they are, have more flavor. So for me, that's why the flavor is exciting. What's important to understand is if you're only getting one type of color, you're only getting one type of micronutrient. So if you're only getting, if you smash beetroots all week, it's not a good thing. People like say, you know, having chocolate's too much is bad for you. It is. Having too much beetroot will be bad for you too. Not only will your bathroom look like it's been painted purple everywhere, but you're just not getting enough of the diversity. Now, the reason for this is important. If you have a diversity of plants, you are helping support a diversity of microbes within you. Now, Dr. B talks about the importance of diversity in the microbiome. So, you know, for every form of microbiome, there's a specific dietary fiber that helps look after it for it to consume to then create what's called a postbiotic. So simply put, if you have a variety of plants, you are eating a variety of micronutrients, which means you are feeding a variety of your microbiome. And I love Avengers. I also love sporting analogies, but Tom Brady is the GOAT. Right? But if I only fed my body enough to create Tom Brady's, his offensive line would not allow him to be awesome because he can't block, you know? Right. So my point is you want to make sure you get a full team to look after your insides. And that is where having a variety of greens, yellows, reds, even blues is so important. So then you can talk about the function. So the postbiotic function has a lot to do with the connection between your gut and the brain directly through something called the vagus nerve. And I won't go into too detail on this, but simply put, just know that if you're involving your brain in anything, it is the central area for cognition and so many other aspects. So to look after our performance, you have to look after your second brain, which is the gut, connected to your first brain, the brain. And a lot of that is to do by eating enough plants and a variety of that.
We love it. We love plants.
We do love plants. Are you getting enough plants?
I hope I'm getting enough plants. Okay. I like plants.
Okay.
I mean, between in the morning, I'm doing, well, not plants, but in the morning, well, yes, plants. I'm doing some fruits and usually some sort of an omelet with like different veggies in it. Lunch is always some sort of a salad with like some sort of a protein in it. Right. I'm like a big, and then of course that smoothie after I go to the gym. So I'm always finding a way to mix plants into the mix.
Yeah, it's sick.
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
Thanks, dude. You know, we're working on it. Beyond the things that you've mentioned here, knowing specifically what's good for you in your body, mixing refined sugars, and also making sure that you're getting in enough plants, I want to also touch on the importance of hydration when it comes to eating like a legend, aka also drinking like a legend.
I like that.
Why is it important that we also center around hydration when we're thinking about performing optimally?
Yeah, so particularly, like, I'd say electrolytes are having their moment. A lot of it's through the fact that running's so cool. And I will have a caveat in saying, like, when I say we don't consume enough sodium in our day, I will say that is with those people who are not consuming prepared packaged foods.
Right.
Recently, there's a New York Times article talked about sodium, and it gave you like a quiz, like a 10-part quiz, and it took a look at two different types of meals and it asked you which one had more sodium in them. And you'd be surprised about, like, particularly those with packaged foods, how much sodium is in them. But if you are not consuming packaged foods, you'll be some, and you're doing a lot of particularly long endurance efforts, mm-hmm. you will need to consume electrolytes on top of the hydration. And that is because a 2% dehydration or 2%, any, like just 2% dehydration will lead to a detriment in your performance cognitively and physically.
Yeah.
So, you know, probably talking specifically around running right now or just any endurance effort, we sweat and we lose anywhere between 350 to 700 milligrams of sodium per hour of work. Mm-hmm. I'm a heavy sweater.
Me too. You,
yeah, dude.
And I'm a heavy salt sweater.
There you go.
Yeah, I've had like my sweat analyzed before and I'm like a very salty sweater.
So you can get, as you've just noted, you can get sweat tested to give you a quantitative understanding of use. That's one way you can do this. If you don't want to go that, but you know, you've noted.
I think Gatorade has at-home sweat test kits as well. Like, really? I don't think that you need to go to a lab. Like, oh. I don't want people listening to this to be like, how the hell is someone like me going to get sweat tested?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you can literally Google one on Amazon.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Fun fact.
Fun fact. So, you know, you can obviously get quantitatively tested, but then you can know what spectrum you want. And for me, it's like, I know I sweat so much. So I need to consume 700 milligrams of sodium per hour of work that I put in. So I did an hour and a half workout this morning. So just for me to maintain that, I probably have to have around 1.2, you know, 1200 milligrams of sodium and or electrolytes in general, because I don't want to detriment my performance. So important to do so. Like we hear about the importance of fluid for, you know, our skin, our hair. You know, going back to it, like we got to remember that it's for everything. We talk about performance, cognitive and physical. And so, you know, if you're not taking one of those amazing Stanley cups, have you got a Stanley cup?
A Stanley cup?
Have you not got a Stanley cup?
Oh, I'm not like, I'm sorry. I literally heard you say that, Dan. And I thought you were asking me if I had like a hockey Stanley cup. And I was like, I'm unsure why I would have the
Stanley cup in my apartment.
But you're asking me if I have the Stanley like TikTok cup, like the drinking cup. No, I don't. You know why? Because I drink out of this fellow like refillable bottle. It looks so much more sleek to me. And like, I just couldn't, it's so big. I work out hard enough. Like, why do I need to work out carrying my bottle around my apartment?
Hey, it is obnoxiously large.
It's so big. It's but I mean, appreciation and no hate to the Stanley girlies. I respect your hydration hustle.
No, 100%. It's
sorry. I was very confused there for a moment.
I, you know, what's funny. I said the same thing to my mate. He lives in Brooklyn and he's like, no, but I've had the actual Stanley cup at my place.
Oh, okay. And I was like, that's, wow.
Like, and he's super humble. I'm like, it's low key, pretty cool flex.
Soft flex.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really cool. But yeah, I'd just say, like, in general, make sure that you're drinking sufficient fluid on top of the electrolytes you are having. And people say, well, what's that? It's like, well, people say 8 cups. It's more like, in my opinion, 10. But it also depends on you as an individual, your weight, your mass. Yeah. And you can just look that up. It's pretty simple.
I always also tell people to meet themselves with where they're at when it comes to setting hydration goals, because I think, at least I can speak from personal experience, that I've had very aspirational hydration goals in the past that aren't very realistic for where I'm beginning. So just like with any other goal, that you can set a smart goal when it comes to your hydration. If you're right now sitting at home, I'm staring at this Diet Coke can, you're having like 3 Diet Cokes a day and you're not drinking any water, for us to tell you that you should start drinking 10 cups of water a day, that's not going to be a realistic goal for you where you are in this moment. So maybe a more specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-bound goal for you is, I'm going to start drinking 3 to 4 cups of water per day and begin there. And then once you get that into some sort of a routine, whether that takes 2 weeks or a month, then you can up that threshold. You don't want to set a goal that's going to set you up for failure.
Mate, 100%. Once again, get the reps in. Like I'll tell you firsthand, I've gone all in on hitting a number from scratch and I just couldn't stop peeing. And like that affected my sleep. It affected my performance because I couldn't focus on a task. You know, I had what felt like a small bladder. So progressively get into a place where you meet where you are. Exactly.
Meet yourself with where you're at. Also, to come back and circle back on what we were talking about, Gatorade sells a GX sweat patch. It's $7.50 on their website. And literally it connects to an app and you can learn all of this data about your body, fluid loss, sweat rate, the consistency of your sweat. I mean, that's pretty rad.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of Gatorade in general, but that's pretty cool to know that they can have that.
Yeah, no. And I will also say, for me, hydration over the last few years, as I've learned more about my body and learned that I'm a really salty sweater, has really been rooted in consumption of electrolytes. Element is a partner of the show. Also, I recently switched to using regular milk back in my smoothies and like ditched the almond milk, just because the almond milk wasn't really giving me a lot of bang for my buck. And candidly, I'm fortunate because regular milk doesn't mess with my stomach. I know that a lot of people, we talked about knowing your body and knowing what feels right for you. Regular milk feels right for me. But again, everyone to each their own. And think these electrolyte focus and being really dialed in on how I can integrate that into my regular day-to-day has served me really well.
100%, mate. You listen to yourself and this is how you progress.
This is how you progress.
Oh, bring back the moo.
Bring back the moo. Movement for the moo. Well, Dan, this book looks amazing. You've given us some really amazing tips when it comes to leveling up and quote unquote eating like a legend. Is there anything, and I'm talking, I know we could talk for hours, but any other big tip that you want to hand me when it comes to dialing in on mental and physical performance within your diet?
Look, I think the biggest thing we face in the space of cooking at home is people find either intimidating or, you know, the time, maybe the cost, but bringing it back full circle once again to getting the reps in. I can firsthand tell you, as a professional chef with my name on a restaurant, I screw up the first recipe more often than not because I'm trialing an error. Like that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, people don't have the patience typically to do the same thing. So if I gave everyone the task of cooking a recipe from my book every Tuesday night for the next 3 weeks, the first one would be the most expensive. It would take the most time and it would be the most challenging physically. But by the third time you're doing it, you'll be the cheapest. You'll know exactly where everything is in your kitchen. You've already bought most of the ingredients and you'll have known the first two times how you actually need to get between the kitchen to save time. So if you applied the same principles, you could make washing up so efficient, not time consuming. And I do say that, like, everyone thinks about cooking as time consuming. Some dishes take 2 hours to cook, but only take 10 minutes of your time on the tools. So yeah, I just say, like, get the reps in and give yourself a challenge of cooking the same meal for the next 3 weeks every Tuesday night. Start at like 6:30, give yourself the time. And you'd be surprised over the next 3 weeks.
I love that. I love cooking and I really do use it as a stress reliever. I just need to like highlight some of the recipes in this book. I'm going to speak real quick. Chickpea curry with roasted sweet potato and dill yogurt. Almond crusted spiced chicken with secret weapon tofu aioli. Wait, I'm still going. Oh, there's a no time to cook section. 12 minutes to shakshuka heaven. I love shakshuka. I try to do shakshuka Sundays. 1 minute miso salmon with easy, perfect bok choy. Yes, please. I mean, oh, there's a whole chapter on how to impress a girl or guy, .. or friends. I'm telling you, this book has a lot of good stuff in here. I'm so excited for you. Truly, I can't be more amped. I'll put the link to the book in the show notes. For those of you that don't follow along with Dan just yet, Dan, give us your info and tell us how they could do so.
Yeah, so best way to look at is, you know, just my name, Dan Churchill, whether it be website, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and it's Father's Day and Mother's Day coming up. So this is a great way to either pick a book for a friend, a mother, a father, or if you just want a guy to cook for you, just pick the book up and hand it to him and see what happens.
Invest in yourself. Awesome. I'm over at Emily Abadi at Hurdle Podcast. Another hurdle conquered. Catch you guys next time.